What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Mirror man, you twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror man.
Good morning and welcome to a new edition of the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. The last pre-season game has finished. I've completed the opening soundtrack without ballsing it up. I'm on cloud nine. Matt, pinch me. Is this real?
It's real. We're back. And I'm not just talking about the AOP. I'm not just talking about the new season. I'm talking about Arsenal. Arsenal, we're back. We're back. It's been a while. We were talking about it earlier. I don't think I've been as excited about an Arsenal team since the Fabregas, Nasri, Osharvin, Van Persie team pretty much 10 years ago. This is really building now, and I can't wait for the season to start on Friday.
Matt, it's not normal to smash Sevilla 6-0. 6-0. I mean, that is a mauling. That happens to you as a manager in pre-season. You should expect to get fired. This is a munchie team.
Yeah,
this is one of the best teams in Spain, and we've just absolutely ripped them apart. They had no answers. What's going on?
In the last 2 weeks, Chelsea, Seville, we're just putting teams in crisis. That's what we're doing. This is not what we want to happen. It's not part of the plan for any team to go and get thrashed the way we're thrashing people. So, there's just a real energy and excitement around what we're doing, and we just got to keep it going on into the new season, right?
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing about the six is it could have been more. We had 12 shots on target, 21 attempts at goal. This is like the good old days. Remember when Arsene Wenger sides, we used to go up to play Derby and we'd absolutely pelt them for 90 minutes. Relentless. The press was impressive. I mean, my word, everything is coming together right now. I wonder whether we should just lean straight into the hottest of takes. Matt, tell us what's hot.
Well, me and Johnny were doing the before the whistle yesterday, and we said, what would success be like? We said, you know, a win would be great. Just get a win. We also wanted to see a bit of Tomiyasu, a bit of Smith Rowe, a bit of Tierney to see if they were still alive. Half of the objective was achieved with an absolutely sparkling win. I couldn't believe it when we were 4-0 up inside 25 odd minutes. It was unbelievable to go and watch that. Some of the football was devastating. And to be honest, we took our foot off the gas in the second half, which we had every right to do, leave something in the tank. The hottest of takes is Arsenal are back, you know, from top to bottom. And one of the most exciting things for me is, I call them a front four rather than a front three. Odegaard, Saka, Jesus, Martinelli. It looks electric. And it just takes me back to last November when we were watching us lose to Everton and United and really lacked any attacking coherency. No one can say we don't have attacking coherency now. Our attack looks razor sharp. And I just want to see what we can deliver in the opening few games of the season now with that team.
Yeah, my hot take is more what the other teams in the Premier League should expect this season. We are going to be a difficult, difficult side to play against. There aren't many weaknesses. You can't press us, because everybody can play around the press. I mean, adding Zinchenko and Saliba to the back five is just massive for us. It changes the way that we operate. Thomas Partey looks absolutely electric. Granit Xhaka, I mean, my word. Everyone was like, oh, you know, this system would spit him out. Now he has to play more advanced. Mate, no chance. He's had quite a few assists in preseason. Looks a different player. And then, from an attack perspective, I mean, the most impressive thing that I've been getting in my DMs is we're pressing. We are pressing like animals. It's intelligent. We're setting traps out on the pitch to get the ball back. Like, this is City light. This is proper City light. This isn't like you know, sticking a Stone Island badge on your next t-shirt. This is City Light. This is a very young side. Like the sky's the limit this season. We've got to get the 3 points on Friday. But I tell you what, Crystal Palace and their defense are going to have to be very, very brave and very on point to play around us on Friday. So I'm feeling good. It was lovely to hear the noise in the stadium. Arsenal fans sensed last season something special was brewing very, very early. Now, the doubters outside of Arsenal that were like, you know, Coneboy Arteta doesn't look like a Coneboy anymore. He looks like a man. He looks like a proper manager. So I'm excited. There's loads of hot topics to race through. But I actually wanted to start. I haven't got the banner, but I'm going to write it now. I thought you wrote a really good tweet before the game. It was, you know, the worst kept secret in football. Martin Ødegaard is our new captain. A few people say, you know, there was a journalist, I think it was Sam Dean, top journalist. I really like him. I think he says something about the politeness. And you had a few words on what you thought about it. So, like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Martin Ødegaard being the captain and what makes this different.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to dig into around the captaincy issue. It's been really loaded with Arsenal for many years. You know, our captains have tended to not do very well or leave. And it's been used as sort of a bit of some bait to keep people interested and at the club. So, and then obviously everything with the five captains, it was just an absolute joke. Then we had the Xhaka stuff. That didn't go down all that well. So I'm really pleased to see us going back to one captain. I think that's really important. I'm really pleased to see us not just giving it to our best player, but actually thinking about who has the leadership skills and can act as that conduit between the coach and the players. And I think in Martin Ødegaard, we've made absolutely the right decision because he's young. He's clearly captain material. He's the captain of his national team at a very early age. He's clearly got the respect of Mikel Arteta. The tweet you're referring to was Sam Dean, the football reporter, talking about how he's wonderful from a comms perspective and is very nice and polite. And yeah, I'm sure from the outside he can look a bit like that because he looks like the sort of young man that you would want your daughter to date. But I think that the thing about Martin Ødegaard is he has a real intensity to him. This is a guy who was playing at Real Madrid at 16 years old and frankly got spat out by the brutality of the football system. It didn't work out for him there, but he's still young enough to put it right. I think he's got a chip on his shoulder. I think he wants to be one of the most elite players. And I think he brings that winning mentality and that captain sensibility to us. And I like talking about inflection moments. And I think it's if I feel like we're at the start of a new chapter with this season. And I love the idea of having a new captain to take us through. And when you think about someone like a Jordan Henderson, who's been Liverpool's captain, I see Ødegaard as very much in a similar mold from a personality standpoint to a Jordan Henderson, someone who can lead, who can be calm, who can build relationships with the press, but also referees. I think he's got the respect of his teammates for what he's done and what he's going to do. So I think it was absolutely the right decision. And I look forward to him being in that role for 5-6 years rather than thinking, okay, maybe that'll keep him at the club for another season. Maybe that's what he needed to convince him that we love him. This isn't about what the player needs, it's about what the team needs. And I think it's that flip that is why I'm really excited about this.
Love all of that. Thinking I wrote a tweet the other week about why the captaincy for Ødegaard was unique, because, and like you say, it's not a bribe, and it was a bribe for Thierry Cesc and Robin van Persie. It's not based on, you know, seniority or status. Aubameyang, he's not injury prone. Gallas, Per Mertesacker, Thomas Vermaelen. It wasn't predicated on a vote. Xhaka, and he's not too old for it. Mikel Arteta. I mean, he basically sat on the bench when he was made captain towards the end of the season. I think that this is such a good decision. You know, he's going to be playing. He's got a robust fitness, speaks a whole bunch of languages, and he's just a role model. You know, people, we got into this sort of phase where people were saying, you know, captains shouldn't be a role model. I think a captain should be a role model at a club like Arsenal. And we've got a lot of players that could fulfill that role. But I think Martin Odegaard and is known for being a great leader, was when he came on loan to Arsenal in a, during a very difficult season last January. Still one of my favourite games was him picking up the slack in that West Ham game, driving us forward. And, you know, there was this real bullshit statistic that was going around. Like, I think Martin Odegaard was the created the second most shots from open play last season. And people saying, yeah, but he didn't create a lot of big chances. Like, the big chance statistic, that's reliant on two people. You get more big chances with Harry Kane because of his movement, because of his pace, and because of his quality. When you're pinging balls to Lacazette, who can't run, you've got a problem. I think you're going to see a monster of a player this season because he's got runners. We had a right winger, like with X Factor, with special sauce. He's just going to have the pick. He's going to be pulling threads all season. So I'm really excited that we've got him. I think we've got an outrageous talent. And something that you've referenced a few times. So here's a bit of entomology. I think that's how you say it. You know the term chip on the shoulder? And this is me exposing myself as being a bit of an idiot. I thought chip on the shoulder was like a greasy chip. You know, like a British chop it up, chip shop chip. You know, because no one wants a greasy chip on the shoulder. That apparently is not true. A chip on the shoulder is from the 19th century in America, where if you wanted to fight somebody, you would put a chip of wood on your shoulder and dare someone to knock it off. I think Arsenal have got a lot of players in their squad with a chip of wood on their shoulder. Jesus today, chip on his shoulder. Zinchenko, chip on his shoulder, because Pep didn't want to start him and he wanted to sign players above them. Martin Odegaard, still got that Madrid chip on his shoulder. Loved that club, wanted to play for them, didn't really get an opportunity. Carlo didn't believe in him. William Saliba, put out on loan last season, chip on the shoulder. There are a lot of players with those chips on the shoulder. And I think that there are like people that have got an axe to grind. There's just a different mentality. They've got
well,
a point to prove.
I think that it's what modern Arsenal at its best has been built on. If you go back to George Graham and the way that he signed players from the lower leagues. You know, you talked, I remember the podcast that we did with Perry Groves, where he talked about George Graham looking at the character of him when he was playing in a game and they were 5-0 down, or, you know, plucking Dixon and Bold from the lower leagues. But even with Wenger, it was Dennis Bergkamp, you know, chip on his shoulder after Inter Milan, Patrick Vieira from AC Milan, Thierry Henry. You know, they all had something to prove when they came. Kanu had a heart issue. No one would touch him. And we brought them in and they blossomed in our system. And I think Arsenal at their best have found those players with something to prove and have used that as fuel. And both our paths have aligned. We've managed to be the vessel that those players need to reach their full potential. And I think when you look at it now, we're getting back to the right kind of Arsenal DNA. We've got players who have got something to prove, and I think they're going to prove it.
Before we go into the next section, if you are watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button and you'll always know when we're coming on. So hit that subscribe. And if you're on a podcast, don't just listen, subscribe again, because we want to make sure we're in your ears all the time. All right, let's move on to the next section. I thought this was quite a funny comment that you made in the green room, Matt. Double winners. Won the Florida Cup and the Emirates Cup. What does this mean about our season? What do you think? When you're looking at preseason, when you lose all your games, they don't mean anything. When you win all the games, they mean everything. Where are we sitting? Finishing our last preseason game, smashing Sevilla 6-0. Do we have a right to believe that something special is brewing, or should we just wait until Friday night to see what's going to happen?
Look, I think it was actually really important because we had a mixed season last year. I think by the end, we were all convinced that we were on the right track. But you forget that the end of the season was very, very disappointing. That Tottenham result, the Newcastle result was real heads in hand stuff. And it was going to take something pretty special to make sure that we're not starting the season going, if we lose to Palace, it's Arteta out. You know, that was the vibe. You know, what are we doing? There's no progress, all of this sort of stuff. But I think a combination of very good communication at the club. I think a very good from the outside transfer window. And then obviously that is solidified by the quality of the preseason, not just results, but performances. I think the performances have been really, really good. This hasn't been like, we didn't beat Seville 1-0 today, beat them 6-0. At Chelsea, we didn't beat them on pens after 0-0, you know, beat them 4-0. I think it's impossible not to be really, really optimistic. And part of that is obviously these cups don't mean anything, but they contribute to the feel good factor. And you can't help but think that they help build the camaraderie and the vibes and the team spirit at the training ground, because, you know, it just feels like light years from last season. I remember very well you and me talking about Maitland-Niles and how he was being treated by Arteta and how we felt Arteta didn't treat the players right and all of this sort of stuff a year ago. Earlier today, I'm seeing a video with Eddie Nketiah and Arteta playing some game where they're guessing old squad numbers and players. And you can just tell that the spirit and the way that Arteta is interacting with the players is like night and day from last season. And I sort of have a little bit of a hypothesis about it, which is that the Amazon documentary really played a big role in that, because no one wants to be on a show where they just come across like an absolute asshole. And I think it may have forced him to readjust some of his man management skills in a very subtle way. But just the vibes are so strong at the moment.
Yeah, and everything that I'm hearing, the vibes at the training ground are strong. The training is super intense. Everybody's getting on. The big names that we brought into the squad are leading. I think everybody is massively impressed with Gabriel Jesus. You know, we've not just signed a top player, we've signed a leader and a winner. And just having that, you know, we had a really youthful side last season, and none of them had ever won anything. And having someone in your team that when the chips are down, talking about chips again, you've got somebody that you can look to that's been through it before, that won't allow a game to trail off like Newcastle. I think having Zinchenko and Gabriel Jesus in the side, even Fabio Vieira's, you know, he's won a lot of trophies for a 22-year-old. Having that mentality in the squad is such an intangible asset that we just didn't have last season for a whole bunch of reasons. So I think the vibes are great, and it's just people always think when you sign really big players that other players will be concerned about it. You know, like last season, Ødegaard came in and everyone was concerned what would happen with Smith Rowe. It lifts people. You know, you want to go to war with battle ready players, and I think that we've got a really, really, really strong squad this season. So although the preseason doesn't really mean anything, I think having a really top to bottom great preseason goes a long way, because we haven't had one in a long time. And I'm not just talking performances on the pitch, like you said earlier, the PR, the way that we're communicating, the speed of which we've got our business done. I mean, I don't think we've got business done this far since we signed Thomas Podolski. He was like a really early signing. Felt like we were moving on business then. But then maybe we didn't do anything for the rest of the window. To have so many like important names in the squad allows us this. It allows us this privilege. We just beat Sevilla 6-0. We didn't have Tomiyasu. We didn't have Kieran Tierney. And we didn't have Smith Rowe. This time last season, if we didn't have those three players, it is a fucking disaster.
Is Thomas Podolski Lucas's twin brother?
Did we sign Thomas Rosicki and Lucas Podolski in the same window? Is that it? You don't think so? All right, there's no way around that.
I was just sat there going, Thomas Podolski.
I'm sorry.
No, I agree. And, you know, we're just getting rid of our reliance on certain players. You know, even the idea of being without the idea last season of being starting the season without our fullbacks. Well, we saw what happened because we played the end of the season without them. So we had Cedric and Tavares, and it was a nightmare, frankly. Like, neither of them are terrible. But this season, we're starting with Ben White at right back and Zinchenko at left back. And you feel like that's good enough to get us through, you know, until Tomiyasu's fit, because we've got Saliba now in the middle. And, you know, we'll wax lyrical about him. We could do a whole podcast on that bloke, I tell you.
Let's move on to the next section, because there's a few people that are paying attention to what goes on in these podcasts. Chicago Gooner, LeGrove, will you at least admit you were wrong in your assessment of Jesus? You were dragging him last year. Oh, yes, I will. I will eat all the humble pie. No, here's the great thing about me being really, really wrong on Gabriel Jesus. It doesn't matter because I win. I win. If he was terrible, I would win. If he scores 25 goals this season, I win, because at core, I am an Arsenal fan. And being wrong on a player and their talent doesn't matter if they're scoring 20 goals, because I'm an Arsenal fan. My opinion is not to be right all the time. It's never going to be right. Gabriel Jesus, I pushed for the tall boy summer. I was wrong. It's about short kings. Gabby Jesus is our short king. He has been immense. And I will eat all the humble pie on Gabriel Jesus, because we need a player like him. So they were comparing him to Ian Wright. You got, like, some people are like, is he Ian Wright? Is he Robin Van Persie? Like, is he Anelka? Like, what is he? Like, he's a bit of everything to everybody. And so let's talk about Gabriel Jesus. Probably, yeah. It's looking like it could be one of the greatest signings of the decade. He's been immense in preseason. Matt, what have we got here? What's this ball of magic on the pitch?
Well, listen, we were all like, you know, why is City getting rid of him? Are we getting City cast-offs? Those were sort of the real factors that were sort of holding us back. Pep knows football. If he's prepared to let this guy go, what's behind that? All of those sorts of things. Well, we're being proven wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong, because he looks absolutely fucking majestic. He's banging goals. He adds so much. His movement is beyond belief. He presses from the front. The biggest thing for me, though, is he looks, and this may be me like an Arsenal bias, but to me, he looks happier than I've ever seen him. Because I never really thought about Gabriel Jesus as someone who was always smiling, but he just seems really, really, really happy at Arsenal. He's the main man. He wants to show what he can do. I think he is probably surprised at how many great players there are around him. I think he's going to strike up incredible partnerships, especially with Martinelli. I think you're already seeing that. I think the Brazilian connection is really working.
That little diagonal ball.
I'm just so excited. And to get a hat trick and stay fit a week before the season. Yeah, the only worry now is just keep him fit, wrap him in cotton wool, because this guy is going to score bucket loads of goals. Bucket loads. I think 20 plus Premier League goals is on the cards. And if you think about, I think someone said he equaled Lacazette's number of open play goals in 25 seconds today. He's just unstoppable. Poor Alex.
The interesting thing about Gabriel Jesus is what he brings out in other players. I think Arsblog said it's wild to have a player that can connect the play like Lacazette, but then join the attack. He's like his physical capabilities. I underestimate them. I'll keep on saying it. He's like watching Luis Suarez. He's all over the place. He's got incredibly tight control. That ability to stand with the ball and explode forward, it's such a rare skill and such a rare talent. But he could be a number 10. He can play as a nine. He can go out wide. Like he really has it all. The only thing he doesn't have is height. But I don't think it's necessary if you have that innate ability to know where the ball's going to land. I mean, like the final goal that he scored today, where he's just sniffing out danger in the box and then he's on it. Like he's so quick. He's so quick. And you know, we haven't even seen Fabio Vieira in the side yet, but I feel like all of these sort of tricky players are built for the movement of Gabby Jesus. And the final hope that I have with him is it's like, you know, let's not forget Eddie Nketiah this season. You know, Eddie Nketiah is here to play. He looks ready, scored another goal today. I hope that Eddie gets more 20 minutes in games. Like Arteta's got to manage his squad better this season. If we're winning 3-0, give Eddie 30 minutes. You don't need to play Gabriel Jesus for the full 90s. Like, let's make sure that we don't overextend him in the front half of the season. And then during our tricky fixtures in January and February, we don't have him. So it's like maybe we're over-egging the fear factor on injury. But it is worth noting, Gabriel Jesus is not a 60-game-a-season player generally. You know, he's like minutes here and there. You know, he's coming off the bench. Like, I just hope that we ease him into being the main man and lean on Eddie Nketiah. Don't wait until there's an injury to bring him into the side this season.
Yeah, totally. It's great to see Eddie get the goal. I thought really, really, really pleased for him. I think, yeah, I agree with everything. We just got to like start the season and see what he can do. But I think it's easy to underestimate. Obviously, Manchester City are probably the best team in the world, pound for pound.
Yeah.
But I think that playing at the Emirates I think Arsenal are a bigger club than City, like in an unbiased point of view. I think playing at the Emirates every week is going to be a more enjoyable experience than playing the Etihad week in, week out. I think the love he's going to get from the fans here is going to surpass anything he got from City. I think his role is clearer than it was at City. He's obviously getting paid more money than he was at City. So it's all set up for him to make this his home. And it's easy to go, oh, well, why would anyone want to leave City? It's like, well, you know, it's not that City are not a Manchester United, a Liverpool, an Arsenal, a Real Madrid, a Barcelona. They're not one of those clubs. They're a brilliant club that have done very well at spending a lot of money of their owners, essentially. But in terms of walking out at one of the best stadiums in one of the greatest cities, I think we underestimate the pull of that. And I think Edu especially has done a brilliant job of getting him and Arteta as well.
Yeah, being the man on the streets of London is better than being the man in Manchester. Like, you know, Manchester City aren't even the biggest club in their own city. You know, they have to try and sell tickets during the season. They don't get sellouts. Pep Guardiola has to say it would be really nice if everybody turned up for a game where we might win the league. You know, I think you're totally right.
Oh, and there's one more point as well, which is Richarlison or Jesus. I cannot believe. Imagine being the team that signed Richarlison when your big rivals signed Gabriel Jesus. Richarlison is not even fit to lace Jesus's his boots. He is a poor man's Gabriel Jesus. I'm so excited that we are getting players of this caliber and not players that the scum have got, basically.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think Eddie is going to score more goals than Richarlison this season on less minutes, no doubt. But Gabriel Jesus is an immense signing. I think it could be an iconic signing, like a tipping point signing, like Dennis Bergkamp. I really do. 25 years old.
Well, it's I think we're showing that having a little bit of patience, and obviously I was impatient in January, but to get Jesus for 45 million when Vlahovic was what, 68? So, yeah. You know, to get a full 25 million less, but there's no way Vlahovic is scoring more goals than Gabriel Jesus next season. It's just not happening. They could be similar, but I think, you know, it's just a fantastic deal in terms of the amount of money we paid as well. And we need to give the club credit for that one. And the Ødegaard one as well, because we were talking about him before. The money that we're paying for the quality of players we're getting feels really sharp. We need to get better at selling, but like the buying now, and I like the way actually, with a bit of hindsight, we walked away from the Lisandro Martinez deal when it didn't work for us financially. Because the old Arsenal walk away from the Martinez deal and then don't sign anyone. Whereas what we did is we went in, we had a plan B, we got Zinchenko, the money was right, the player was right, happy days. No one at Arsenal is talking, no fan is talking about Lisandro Martinez now. And I think no fan is talking about Vlahovic, who frankly dominated 5 months of conversation because we were so desperate for a striker.
The interesting thing about Lisandro Martinez, it's like, listen, he's obviously a top player. I know everyone's taking the piss out of how tall he is. He wouldn't have played, I think he'd play centre back for United. He would have played left back for Arsenal. But at the end of the season, do you think we'll look back and regret Zinchenko? Do you think will Lisandro Martinez look like a player that cost 35 million more? I don't think so. I'm happier having a player that already does it in the league, you know?
Yeah. And I think I think the other thing is looking, and this is jumping around a bit, but looking at Martinelli and the way he's starting the season, his performances may save us 50 million in a new winger. They really might, because I don't see the same urgency about signing a really great winger as I did, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, just by the quality of his form. I think Martinelli is going to, he could be starting every single game for us this season.
I still think I still would be more comfortable. Like, let's get Nicolas Pepe out of the club and let's get a top, top quality winger in that has a history of showing up and creating those special sauce moments. I think that would be the cherry on top. And I still think, you know, our midfield does need a Tielemans. Just get him in.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to the next topic that everybody was talking about. Arsenal and a press. I think people started to fade on Arteta early on in his career. They were like, he doesn't know how to coach a press. I think that has now looked very misguided. As misguided as me saying that Gabriel Jesus wasn't the man for us. Arteta's got his players now. And he's got the culture right. He's got the attitude right. Everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing. And Arsenal's press looks frightening. It looks absolutely frightening. Matt, we've seen it before with previous managers where a press starts in September and then by October, it's finished. Do you think Mikel Arteta is going to play this aggressive press throughout the season? Or is this a mirage? What do you think?
Well, I think the thing about a press is when it's good, it's very, very good. And when it's bad, it's very, very bad. So I think we want to play this press all the time, like Liverpool and Man City do, right? They press every team, full stop. I think we're going to look to do it as much as we can at home and against certain teams. I think it's a dangerous game to go in and play this like really extremely high press away from home from minute one against teams, because you can easily get into a situation where you go a goal down or two goals down early and the game's lost. And even Manchester City have those moments. I'm thinking about that West Ham game towards the end of last season where, you know, playing a very dominant front foot high press, going to win the game, 2-0 down at half time. Now, Manchester City were able to put it back and I think get a point. Or maybe even win, I can't remember what it was. But the point is, it's a high-risk strategy. And so I think it's great that we've got it in our locker. I think it's great that we're going to use it. But we need to just think about when we apply it. Obviously, like you said, we have seen those moments where we've started off pressing and then have fallen away. So it bodes well that the high press has been the feature of pre-season. And I do think that the players we've got in, Saliba, Zinchenko, they're all high pressers. It goes back to a few years ago when I think it's Klopp or Guardiola or De Bruyne said, oh yeah, Martinelli's the only Arsenal player who ever presses. No one else will press. So, you know, we're changing that again. So, yeah, it's great to see, right?
Yeah. I like that it's intelligent as well. It's not just running around. It's closing off those spaces. I mean, one of the features in Arteta's first season, his first full season, was teams couldn't get at us. Like, we didn't really give away a lot of shots. I think last season we didn't do as well. But, generally, we are difficult to create chances against. Sevilla had 5 attempts at goal, 1 on target today. I hope the feature of not allowing too many shots off at Aaron Ramsdale's goal is something that we carry through this season. And that all starts with having everybody on the pitch, knowing where to be, knowing when to press, knowing what angles to press. Like, if you can make it really difficult, for a defender to play through the lines and make it so the pass has to be extremely accurate, that's a high-stress situation. That's the situation that I'm hoping Palace's defenders are going to struggle with, because they're not going to have the level that we have when it comes to technical ability. And if they don't start well against us, it's going to be a miserable afternoon for their defense, because I think we're just going to be hoovering up balls all afternoon. So I'm really encouraged by the press. And it just goes to show you, it's like, all it takes is one or two players that don't want to do that press and the whole thing collapses. So you literally got to have a squad of 22 players that are just going to go to bat for it.
I also think it's, even today, you do see moments with any high press where you end up in like 2v2s at the back. 2v2s, 2v3s. And what you really need in those instances is good one-on-one defenders. And, you know, for so many years, we've had very, very poor one-to-one defenders. We've been very susceptible to a ball over the top. We've been very susceptible to rash defending. Saliba, in my opinion, is absolutely built for this system, because, you know, 1v1, you're not that worried. You still think he's got enough to mop it up, because he's just got such pace, so calm, so good on the ball. My hero, basically.
what did Johnny do to you on the Patreon podcast last night? What have you two been chatting about? Your hero. You want him on your shirt, right?
I do. I do. Well, some people are saying that Arsenal will refund you, will give you a new shirt if the number changes. So actually, it's not a bad idea to get number 12 now and then get a new shirt with number 2 on it in 2 months' time.
Before we get into William Saliba, and we're going to come back to that one. We don't normally flog things on this YouTube, but there's a website that I love. It's called Art of Football, and they have amazing merch. They're very cool. They're the type of like creatives that intimidate you a little bit, because they're so fashionable and youthful. They've got some of these shirts. I think Adidas are letting them sell these. It's limited batch. Johnny, the one and only Johnny, modeling there. I don't know. He's got
very drippy.
Very drippy. He's on brand with the sandals. And if you go to artoffootball.com and use the code LG10, you will get a discount on the shirt, and you can have bruised banana high fashion. So jump on that link, get a shirt, and maybe you could look as cool as Johnny. Matt Candela, you've got one that's gone to your mother's house.
It's waiting for me in London. I am going to be at the first game of the season at the Emirates against Leicester City, wearing that. Hopefully it's sunny, because otherwise I'm gonna look like a soggy banana. but I can't wait.
Okay, let's.
I don't know if I can put it off like Johnny though. He does look good in it. He was wearing Johnny it yesterday on the pod.
He's got a lot of drip. On the pod, which is if you want to sign up to our Patreon, we're putting the Before the Whistles on Patreon this season. You go to patreon.com. You type the Arsenal opinion in. And then you just tell us what you want to pay, and then we'll give you exclusive content throughout the season. It is worth it. It is value for money. I was listening to the podcast yesterday. I thought it was great. I'm paying into the fund. because I love it so much. But let's get back onto football stuff. William Saliba. I mean, Johnny's been campaigning for him. The Saliba ultras have been banging the table. This is the man. This is a generational talent. This is the second coming of Virgil van Dijk. And I had my doubts. Not big doubts. I thought he'd be good. I think he looks ready. And I think that Ben White, don't get comfortable with that right back position, my man, because I think William Saliba's coming for your place. He looked brilliant today. He's calm on the ball, very nimble for a big man, great on one-on-ones, brave with his passing, and he's huge. He is built for the Premier League. Matt, are we going too far with this? Is it too early to tell what we've got with William Saliba, or what the 4,500 minutes last season enough to say we have the best young centre back in the world?
Yeah, I think it's all coming together, and I think he's just such a huge addition and a big part of the feel good factor. Because make no mistake, he's like signing a 60, 70 million pound centre half this summer. And we made that signing a few years ago for a lot of money then, I think 28 million or something. But he is like a new signing for us. It's just so good to have him back. He's coming to compete. I think Arteta is surprised about how good he is. And
he will be centre back first game of the season.
Yeah, and he is so dominant. And he will make mistakes. Sure. The guy's young and he's not perfect, but he's got everything. He's huge. He's fast. But most importantly, he's calm. You know, centre halves can they're not always the calmest. Just look at Rob Holding. You know, Rob Holding's a decent centre half, but he doesn't make you feel relaxed. I think I saw someone say on Twitter, I just want to, instead of meditating, I'm just going to look at Saliba, because he makes me feel so calm. And I'm so excited to have him at the club. And now we've got like some really good squad depth. And once we've got Tomiyasu back, it's going to be really, really competitive at the back, which is good.
What do you think? William Saliba, I can't say enough nice things about him. I've gone on about him for weeks. I think he's going to be a problem for Arteta this season. But there's plenty of games to go around. You know, if we have good cup runs, there could be 60 games up for grabs this season. So there'll be a lot of minutes for him to develop. And all the big clubs rotate their centre-backs. Man City rotate their centre-backs. Like, we can rotate and we can give them enough game time to feel good about where they are. I did wonder about Ben White, a right-back. There were a few little errors that he made today. He's not playing against top-class wingers. He's got a deal with Zaha on Friday. Zaha is a bully. He's powerful. He's horrible. He'll be in his ear all game. And again, Zaha has always had a chip on his shoulder because of, you know, he's at Palace and he wasn't allowed to go. What do you think about Ben White at right back? And then the second part of the question, Cedric seems to be front and center on all of our videos. He seems to be like a very fun character to have around the squad. Is he going to stay if Ben White starts at right back? Like, what's the deal there? So Ben White performance and Zaha.
Yeah. Well, look, I think you've got to have four centre halves. And I think we've got four. We've got Ben White, we've got Saliba, we've got Gabriel, and we've got Rob Holding. And then you've got to have two right backs. And I think at the moment, that's Tomiyasu and Cedric. Ben White is obviously much better than Cedric as a player and can play that right back role. I think he's going to get us through the first 10 games or whatever, until Tomiyasu is up to speed. I think Tomiyasu's back in training, is what,
yeah,
I heard.
Yeah, so, he just won't be match fit.
So he won't be match fit, but I think... So I think Ben White is going to be enough to get us through to get Tomiyasu back. I am not confident that Tomiyasu is going to play more than 20 games at right back this season. And in which case, we do need another right back, in my opinion. I think White will... he can do enough, but I don't think we want him to play 35, 40 games, because that's going to mean that there's too much pressure on Saliba and Gabriel, that they're not going to get a rest or a breather. They're going to be playing nearly all the games, because Rob Holding, frankly, you can't put him in the first team for any game that you really, really, really have to win, because he's capable of doing what he did against Spurs, frankly. So he's great to come in and be a closer, you know, 5-3-2. We've all seen him do that. But I think that's all we want from Rob Holding. So he's going to have a tough game against Palace. I'm sure that Arteta is going to be mitigating against that. He's going to know it's coming. I certainly feel a lot more confident knowing that Saliba's there. I think Saliba's exactly the kind of centre-half that you want, because he's just so big, fast. So I think we've got enough for Zaha. Like, let's be honest, Zaha is a very, very good player, but he's one rung down from the very top. So I think we'll be fine for the beginning, but we've got to get Tomiyasu fit.
Yeah, I don't think Tomiyasu's injury is that serious. He's got to be managed really well this season. I do feel more comfortable having Ben White slotting in than Cedric. Cedric can do an okay job. Don't think he's the guy. If we could ship him out on loan, I'm sure we would. But the exciting thing about that back five, they can all pick out a ball from 60 yards. Zinchenko was doing it today, picking out those long balls. The Arsenal TV people kept on putting replays on when we were on counterattacks. So you've got all five in your back five can ping long balls from 60 yards. All of them can run with the ball at their feet. Saliba is great at carrying the ball through the lines. Ben White is great at carrying the ball. And they can all defend. They're all good defenders. I mean, that, and it's still, you know, the oldest person in that defense is 25. I mean, that's incredible. Top defenders don't peak until their late 30s. Their late 20s. I mean, Marcelo was still going in his early 30s. So there is a lot of upside to this defense that we're building. But the great thing about them is, you know, sometimes you get defense, it's like very flair, but they can't defend. Or they can defend, but they're not very good at playing the ball between the lines or building play. I feel like we've got a nice blend of both, and you don't know where the ceiling is. That's the amazing thing. You don't know where the ceiling is.
And look, we've had to deal with some pretty... Remember David Luiz? You know, bless him. Not a bad guy. But dealing with those types of errors and penalty giveaways every week, I just feel like we've got a much more solid, disciplined unit that can play a system of football that, yeah, it really bodes well for the season.
There's a Cameron in the comments suggesting that Big Gabby is going to drop out when he comes back in. Listen, Cameron, I think when Big Gabby, when those new follicles sprout, you're going to see a different player. His confidence is going to go up. People are going to be saying, hey, great hair, Gabby, in the supermarket. And I think we're going to see a different side of the player. But it's a good shout, because Big Gabby had some problems towards the end of last season and he's been a little bit inconsistent, but I still love him. And it's just great to... It's great that you don't know who's going to drop out, because last season, you knew who was dropping out when you had a fully fit group of players. So I think we're in for a good season with the defenders. Matt, let's talk quickly about... you mentioned it at the top of the show. I think we've done all of the players, not the press. Feel Good Factor is back at Arsenal. Fans are buzzing. Players look like they're buzzing. Everything feels good. And, you know, you've been a supporter of Arsenal for your entire life. You've got a memory like an elephant. can you remember many pre-seasons that have felt this good and not delivered?
Look, I think the one this really reminds me of was this reminds me of that team with Ashavin, Nasri, Fabregas, Van Persie. The season where we actually could have won the league that year. We beat Barcelona at home. That was the last time it felt like we had a really coherent, cohesive unit who were going to go on and challenge for, you know, the big trophies. You know, the real challenge that we've got is we've just got Manchester City and Liverpool are just so good. if they weren't so good, I'd say, look, there's nothing to stop us having a title challenge this year in some shape or form. But I think we already know that those two teams are still a way ahead of us, and we're still a big summer transfer window, like the one we've just had, another £150 million transfer window away from being able to give them a run for their money, with us on the ascendancy and them maybe in the midst of like a mini rebuild, which is sort of happening as they move away from the sort of Salah, Mane, Firmino and that sort of stuff. But I do have a lot of hope, because I think we do have a couple of things up our sleeve that I think those two clubs don't have. And one of them is that nucleus of players who has come through as from the academy, who are Arsenal born and bred. I think that does make a difference. You know, the fact that we've got Eddie, Smith Rowe, Saka, I think that's really positive. And I think there could be another player in maybe Patino in a year or two who could be adding to that list. So there's a lot to feel good about.
I agree. I'm just happy that all of the negativity that was following us around last season, all of the doubt about whether Arteta could kick it up a level, whether our transfer deals were moving the needle, and whether the plan to go with a youthful group of players was the best strategy to get back to the top. And for me, the strategy is brilliant. There is no other way to get back to the top unless you spend a billion. And I think Todd Bowley's going to find out how difficult it is to maintain a top-level club in this league without a strategy to work to. So I think the feel-good factor, the hope that we're feeling right now is underpinned by truth, I think. And if you look at last season, 69 points without the technical players that we needed was an achievement. Yes, it was painful, but 69 points was enough to get top four for the two seasons prior. This season, my big hope was that we'd add an extra 10 points. We just need an extra 10 points. Gabriel Jesus and Zinchenko is the extra 10 points. You know, like there's only one player that drops out of the side and you've got problems, and that's Thomas Partey. I don't think that we've solved for that, really. I don't think Tielemans comes in and does the same job as Thomas Partey. But at the same time, it's like, how much do you have to spend to get a replacement for Thomas Partey? Thomas Partey is a 50-game-a-season player. Like, you go youthful, and then you get the Sambi Lokonga problem. You go more experienced, you get, you know, no one's going to be better than Thomas Partey throughout a season. So I think that that's the only real weakness in the squad. And hopefully, he has a good run this year. And we rotate him in Europa League games, and we wrap him in cotton wool. But other than that, this is the strongest squad we've had in a while. It's the most hope we've had in a while, and I'm excited. But there are some jobs to be done this week, Matt. This will be our final piece before we bow out. 1 week to go, less. You know, we're playing on Friday, 6 days. What jobs would you like to see get done this week?
My dream, I thought it was a good comment about Benny DeVito saying, can we talk about Emil Smith Rowe? I don't think it's going to be another Jack Wilshere, because Jack Wilshere basically got overplayed and broke down. Yeah. One thing we can definitely say about Emil Smith Rowe is he hasn't been overplayed. But we do have question marks around his fitness. So I want to see him, Tomiyasu and Tierney back in training, and I hope there's a fitness plan for Smith Rowe so he can really contribute this season, because, you know, we can't have players going backwards. And he set a high bar with 10 or 11 Premier League goals last season. So we're going to need at least 10 Premier League goals from him again, which is no small feat. You know, it's way more than Martinelli got last year. He had end products, so we need to make sure that that's the case. But the big thing that I want to see I would love to see two contract extensions be made. As a little feel-good factor, a little injection.
Martinelli as well, right?
Yeah, I'd love to see Saka, Saliba and Martinelli put pen to paper before the season starts. I don't need any new signings. I'd love more signings, but I don't need them. I think what we need is those contract extensions to be lined up, because make no mistake, if those get made and announced on Wednesday or Thursday ahead of the season opener against Crystal Palace, with having Saka's future tied up, Saliba looking committed. Honestly, the away end will be in fine voice on Friday night.
Yeah, I agree. They must be banking that for... Well, they're either banking that for Friday, start of the season. Because didn't we do something like that a couple of seasons? We've announced player extensions a couple of times.
I think Aubameyang.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe they're gearing up. Maybe it's for the home game, but getting those players secure. You want to... Arsenal need to create a situation where there isn't that one question. You know, when Arteta first started, it was the Ozil question. Then it was Oba's contract was the question. Then it was Oba being benched was the question. We don't want a question this year. Just want everything secured. The only question is about the football, the formations, and who's fit. And... because that's what a, you know, that's what a settled club has, and we just haven't been a settled club for a very long time. So I'm loving the movement here. I hope Saliba gets a big pay bump. I hope Saka is treated with the same prestige that the Gabriel Jesus is. I mean, like, we're not even talking about Saka just popping up getting two goals. It's so expected for someone so young. It's ridiculous. But a big season expected from him. He's going to the World Cup.
And you forget how these players are improving so much. Saka looked a different player from even a year ago, from even coming back from England duty, where he played in the final. You know, he's coming back now. He looks so dangerous. That the way he receives the ball and just gets on his bike is unreal. Martinelli looks way more dangerous than last season. So, I think we can expect a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got genuinely world-class coaching, and everyone scoffed when I said that we were hiring in a world-class coach, but now you're starting to see it. And like the players really develop between 22 and 25. I mean, remember we watched Cesc Fabregas from a very young age, but Wenger always used to say, listen, it takes a while to add goals to your game, and then all of a sudden Cesc is, you know, double digits for goals and assists. Like, we're still yet to see the next level with a lot of these young players. So it's going to be exciting. And I always remind people, Mo Salah and Sane were, you know, one was in France at Saka's age. The other had only just moved to Switzerland. Like, these players are doing it in the Premier League and finishing fifth already. I mean, imagine what's coming in a couple of seasons' time. So,
I mean, Saka could be Cristiano Ronaldo levels. There's nothing to stop him reaching those heights, in my opinion. Big claim.
I agree. And it is, you know, just a quick word for Man United. Cristiano Ronaldo's not going anywhere next season. He looks like they've lumped him at Manchester United. He can't get a role at a Champions League club. And I think that's going to be difficult for Ten Hag. He likes to play a hard-pressing system, and he's got Christian Eriksen and Cristiano Ronaldo in his starting 11. It's going to be a... interesting to see how he turns that around. I think he's got a big job on his hand.
I'd say one more thing, which is if we go to Selhurst Park on Friday and we lose, could happen. We've got to stay positive. We're on the right track.
Yeah.
Something will have gone wrong. Something will need to be fixed. But there's no reason to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We're on the right track here.
No catastrophizing this season. And if we get a point at Crystal Palace... that is also fine. They've got an incredible home record. A point at Palace is not end of days. I think we've got there are eight. We'll do like a before the whistle where we go into a bit more detail. But we've got eight games in phase one of the season. Five of those games land in August. If we can take 11 points from 15 in August, we will be there or thereabouts at the top of the league. And then the next three games are Everton, United and Brentford. And you'd hope to get 7 points out of that. And if you can go into the first international break in the top four, in the top three, who knows where the season's going to go from there? Because you've got confidence. The team's obviously gelled. You've had some positive moments together. The sun is still shining. And then first game after the international break, Spurs.
I think we might have some unfinished business there.
I think we definitely have. But we'll do a bit of a before the whistle for Patreon this week. So make sure that you sign up to get that. Well, we'll do a bit of a season preview. Hopefully, we've signed a few additional players. Hopefully, we get a few players back to full fitness. Hopefully, there are no niggles in the system and that we've got a full plethora of players to pick from on game day one. And we'll roll from there. So if you are listening to this podcast, if you are, subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. You don't want to miss anything this season. If you want to sign up to our Patreon, go to patreon.com, The Arsenal Opinion. Search it and you can pick what you want to pay, because we know that that inflation stuff is problematic. Big recession incoming. So we're here for you. And Matt, where can people find you on the internet blasting out world-class tweets?
You can find me at Matt Candela. I'm going to be not thinking about anything else for the next 5 days other than Arsenal. Always a great little period. So, yeah, we'll be keeping the vibes up and getting everyone geared up and ready for Friday night.
Brilliant. So if you're listening to the podcast, remember, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Leave a little comment. That helps us. If you're on Spotify, they also have a star system, and we've got a good amount of stars on there. So get in there and give us a 5-star rating. And we will be back in the week with a Before the Whistle, Before the Season special on Patreon. And then we will be going, I think we'll be going live on the Whistle on Friday night. So stay tuned. Book that in your diaries. It's going to be a fun season. We're looking forward to spending it with you. I'm going to play out the outro, and I'll say ciao for now. Podcast Network.